It's 5 o'clock on your Tuesday night. This is Tucson Roadrunners Happy Hour from Fox Sports 1450 AM with David Maradian and Patrick Moore. It's our usual Tuesday night get-together right here on Tucson Sports Station, Fox Sports 1450 AM.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450 AM. David Maradian joined by Patrick Moore on this April 14th. The hockey season is coming to a close. The NHL playoffs, we've got 16 teams in, 16 teams out. The AHL playoff picture rounding into form as well. And what that means, Patrick, in part, unfortunately, for the Tucson Roadrunners, is they have been eliminated from playoff contention with three games left to go. They are 7 points back, which means it's not going to happen. There's no way to mathematically make that work. So these will be their final three games of the season. On the road tomorrow against San Diego, and then a two-game home set against the surging Henderson Silver Knights. But that's the story. Tucson is not eligible to make the playoffs. So just curious your initial reactions on that, Patrick, and your takeaways from what was actually a positive weekend. The Roadrunners got 3 points in Colorado against a very good Eagles team, but ultimately they needed more. And because of the win from San Diego on Saturday, it was going to be a tall task no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, David, it was just such a disappointment. I mean, I think every team comes into the season every year is their main goal is to make the playoffs. I mean, I think it's more than winning the Calder Cup. I think they just want to get to the big dance. And, you know, I thought it was probably some of their best games of the season. They played, you know, they knew that their backs up were against the wall and they needed to get some wins and some help. And they got some help on Friday. I mean, you know, Bakersfield won and Tucson had won in regulation. But, I mean, Saturday was all Colorado. I mean, Michael Hrabal stood on his head and did the best he could, but just, you know, kind of a disappointing end. But, you know, I mean, if you know, the playoffs were kind of in that way, Tucson would have been happy with the performance if their season was not hanging in the balance. So kind of a disappointing end, but I think just overall a lot of positives to take out instead of the negatives.
I thought one of the positives was certainly, and you touched on it, the goaltending. Jackson Stauber, when they got the victory on Friday, I thought he played brilliantly, and Hrabal kept them right in. It got the game to overtime, and Tucson was competitive, but it's not like Colorado's not a team that generates a lot of chances, because they are. And either way, Tucson, I thought their goaltending was a key reason why they were able to get 3 points, one game going to overtime. The other one ended up being a somewhat convincing victory, 5-2, in a game where they were outshot by double digits on Friday. But Stauber, I thought, was that good that he was able to ensure they got the victory there. So my expectations for the goaltending with three games left to go probably is they're going to play each guy once. I think Valalta, Stauber, and Hrabal can each anticipate one start. Do you see it differently, or you agree with that?
I think it's going to be like that. I mean, you know, you never know if Maddie, I believe that Valalta did get called up. I believe James Mackey saying in our PR group chat that he was called up, but I don't know if that's for playoff reasoning or that's just because they need extra bodies. But if Maddie does come down to finish out the season, I wouldn't be surprised if it goes that way. Maybe Maddie finishes at home, and maybe Hrabal plays against San Diego on Wednesday. Maybe it's, you know, it could be a different way of tandems. But I think each of those three guys will definitely start at least one of the last three games.
No question. And regardless of the goaltender situation, you have to expect some of the top contributors for Tucson to probably spend some time with the Utah Mammoth here as the postseason comes around the corner, and will be starting next week. Because, you know, the Roadrunners are out of playoff contention. Season's going to be ending. So could we see – Kevin Rooney is already, I think, with the Mammoth currently, and he's always seesawing back and forth. But maybe even other players like Daniil Boot and Ben McCartney, you know, perhaps Cameron Hebig – we'll see if the Mammoth have an appetite for any more forwards. But it could be it could be a different group taking the ice for Tucson this weekend. They could be missing some of their younger or some of their established guys, and maybe we'll see some younger faces, some newer players on the ice, which I think could be an interesting change of pace and a chance for the Roadrunners to evaluate the depth of their roster.
I think so too. I mean, you know, there's guys probably from the ECHL that will probably come up and fill some of those roles, but I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they run with a similar lineup they did against Colorado. I mean, to kind of send off the season, I think a lot of, you know, it's probably going to be our most anticipated, highly attended weekend out of all this, out of the entire season. So I wouldn't be surprised if they decided to keep some of the guys down before the NHL playoffs start, because I believe the NHL season wraps up next Thursday, or this coming Thursday, actually. So we'll probably see a lot of guys maybe go up for a game with Utah and probably come back down, and who knows, maybe they'll fill the void from the ECHL guys.
Some teams actually playing their final regular season game today, as a good portion of the league in the NHL is at 81 games played. I want to touch on this as we began with the Roadrunners situation. So who's in, who's out in the NHL? Some of the surprising, there's nothing in the Atlantic Division that makes sense, first of all. Detroit, Florida, Toronto, they're out. Correct me if I'm wrong, those were the top three teams in that division last year, or three of the top four, aside from Tampa.
I mean, Detroit, Florida, was definitely Detroit. There. I mean, they didn't make the playoffs again. I mean, I just have to look at Detroit. I mean, if I get they were played by injuries, but they had a lead. They were leading the division on February 2nd, just before the Olympic break. And then just a pile of injuries came up with them. And I mean, pretty much, you know, it's kind of a crazy story in the NHL. I thought this would be the year that they would finally get over the hump. They got some better goaltending with John Gibson. And now it's like the Buffalo Sabres are the Atlantic Division. When did you ever think you would ever say that?
Never. I don't think ever again in my life.
I didn't think my best friend who lives next door to me probably would think he'd ever say that in his lifetime. So who knows? But it's going to be a really exciting playoffs this year. There's some new teams, some new faces that we haven't seen in a long time. So I'm very excited to see how it all plays out.
And then in the Metro, only three teams get in, and one of the teams you thought had to be one of the three halfway through the season because they looked like they were young, they were playing very well, was the New York Islanders. And they completely fizzled out. Now, that's an issue sometimes with young teams, right, is those players are used to shorter seasons and not quite ready for 82 games, especially going from October to April. And as those later months kind of drag on, the grind of the season sets in. And that, you think that was a factor for New York?
I don't think so. I think maybe a little bit, but, they just went on some really tough losing streaks. And you can't lose at this time of year. It's very important. And they were so, doing everything. They gambled. I mean, they fired their coach with what, four games left? They fired Patrick Waugh with four games left in the season. They were doing whatever it took to try to make it to the playoffs, but they had two really bad losses, one against Ottawa at home and then the one that eliminated them against Montreal at home. So, but I think they just wanted to get through the season and see what would have happened. I mean, they didn't really have a lot of expectations. I mean, Matthew Schaefer played to his expectations. I think he probably overachieved his expectations this year. I mean, what a great talent in New York, and they're going to be so happy for the next couple of years. Probably you're not going to like it as a Rangers fan, but it's just kind of disappointing for them because there was a lot of promise with the last couple of weeks of the season, and it just kind of fizzled out. So we'll see what happens in Long Island.
Now, part of the story in the Western Conference was we've been expecting the Utah Mammoth to be that number one wild card for pretty much the entire season. It's something I've been saying since at least January that, hey, come on, they're going to be the number seven. I mean, they're going to be that number one wild card. They're going to play the division winner from the Pacific. That's all there is to it. Well, the LA Kings are just 1 point behind Utah, and perhaps that won't be the case. I still happen to think the Mammoth will hold off LA and get that number one wild card, but it is possible that they fall into the number two. Now let's talk about the significance of that. I think it's huge. If Utah does slip and the Kings catch them, you're talking about round one Colorado Eagles, or excuse me, Colorado Avalanche, round one Colorado, round two the winner of Dallas and Minnesota. Now even saying the words round two is pretty bold, because you're telling me that they're going to beat the Avalanche in a playoff series. Now, James Mackey seems to think yes, because the Avalanche are the President's Cup winners, or President's Trophy, and hey, the team with the best regular season record never wins the Stanley Cup. That doesn't mean they're not going to win the first round, but we'll see about that too. I think, rules are meant to be broken, and we'll see if that holds, because the Avalanche are just that good. But hey, if Utah is the number two wild card, you're talking about Colorado, should they beat Colorado, which they wouldn't be expected to, Minnesota or Dallas, compared to if they can hold off and get that number one spot, probably looking at Vegas in the first round, and then the winner of Edmonton and Anaheim. not the same. Those are not the same at all.
It's just crazy. I mean, James Mackey would probably know this history, and you probably don't know. I don't know if you know this fact, but the last time a President's Trophy winner won the Stanley Cup was the Blackhawks. It was the Blackhawks in 2013.
Oh, the Blackhawks. Yeah.
But technically, if you look at that season, that was the lockout, half-shortened season. I think they only played like 48 games. So I don't know the last time an 82 wins, probably the Red Wings, I would have to say. Yeah. One of those Red Wings teams won the Stanley Cup. But it is just an exciting time. Playoff hockey's back. The Ducks made it in. The Mammoth got in. What a story if the Mammoth can make a run, if they're able to not get the second wild card spot. They get the first wild card spot.
They've got to get the first wild card spot.
They have to get the first wild card spot. Yeah, if they see themselves trying to get through a round, they just can't get that wild card two. I mean, the Ducks could slip to that wild card two spot. That's the craziest part. Like, that's what I was saying to you off air, is like the playoff matchups, like in the NBA, have been set like for months, as you said. The NHL ones, they could still change today. So it's going to be a really interesting thing to see what happens.
Utah's got a favorable matchup home against Winnipeg, and that feels like a kind of a must win there, right? If they can hold off the Jets, the Kings are off to Vancouver, which is also an easy game. Yeah, you think Utah's got to win that spot, because the Kings, be shocked if they lose to Vancouver. I mean, you have to be surprised. You can't be expecting the worst team in hockey to hold their ground against an LA Kings team that's played pretty well recently. So it feels like a big one tonight for Utah against Winnipeg.
Well, never say never. The Ducks lost to Vancouver in overtime on Sunday. And that the Ducks could have easily been a little bit more comfortable. I mean, they would have been in a playoff spot on Sunday, not yesterday. So, and the Ducks have an even tougher schedule. And well, now, I mean, they have to play Minnesota and Nashville, which, man, Nashville, that's a team that I feel like we should get into a little bit, because I thought they were actually going to get that last spot. There was a part of me the last 2 weeks, I was like, I think Nashville's going to get it. They were on a good stretch, but then the Kings just kept winning and Nashville kept picking up just maybe 1 point each, and the Kings were just picking up 2 points. So that's just, you know, yes, you're picking up a point, but the team behind you could be picking up 2 points right in the rearview mirror, and then they just leap over you. So
to the chagrin of new minority owner Nick Saban, the Nashville Predators are not going to be advancing to the postseason. But what do you think went wrong with Nashville down the stretch, Patrick? I mean, you're absolutely right. They were in a position to capture the spot, and all of a sudden they weren't. Cold play, and they're now eliminated. Do you think anything changed in their performance? Why weren't they able to close here down the stretch?
Well, I think first off, they had no expectations to make it. There was a point in the season when they went to Germany that there was rumors that they were going to fire their head coach. And I mean, they had a really horrible start to the season. Things were going really wrong. They didn't know if they were going to make it, if they're going to trade Stamkos, if they're going to trade Ryan O'Reilly. I mean, I thought this team was done in March, and then they somehow came out of it and were in a playoff spot middle of March, maybe our spring break. I said, oh, maybe they'll finish the job. And then I think they just, you know, I mean, that Kings loss in the shootout a couple of days ago kind of hurt them. I think they just, a couple of their losses that they had in regulation really hurt them. I think it was just, you know, they were winning at the wrong time, and they were picking up points at the wrong time. You know, they weren't getting full points. They were just kind of getting gimme points in overtime. So that's kind of, you have to get 2 points at this time of year. You can't, leave points left under. So I think if you're a Nashville Predators fan, you're like, wow, I can't believe we were even in this discussion of a playoff spot if you asked me in November. I think that's what I think any Nashville Predators fan said. But again, I don't really follow the Predators, but I think that's my kind of opinion, is they weren't even supposed to be in this spot back in November. So a lot has changed.
Do you have one under-the-radar team you think could really come close or even win the Stanley Cup that nobody's necessarily talking about, not one of the top seeds? Who could come from under the radar a little bit? Anybody?
I don't even know. I mean, like, I'd love to see the Ducks and the Flyers do it. That'd be great. But I think Buffalo. I know they won the Atlantic Division, but it just wouldn't be such a great story.
Some people think that Buffalo is going to lose in the first round, and probably they'll be looking at either. They'll probably be looking
at possible.
Boston.
I mean, Montreal has, I think that's a team to worry about. I mean, Tampa with all their experience.
I think Montreal's got a real shot.
Cole Caulfield, Slavkovsky, all those guys. I mean, you saw how loud that building was last year against the Capitals in the playoffs. You know, that's a team that I'm like, man, I miss the Canadians in the playoff mix every year when I was growing Absolutely. Up. They were always there.
Have you ever been there? Have you ever been to the Bell Center?
No, I've had friends who've gone to Montreal and they've said it's such a fun city.
As good as it gets.
And yeah. Have you been to the Bell Center?
I've been 3 or 4 times. I love it. I could live in Montreal though. I love that. I love the city. I love the Bell Center.
A lot of people have said. A lot of players say like that's a fun city to go to on the road. It's one of the best parts of the Canadian swing Montreal is one of the I mean in the winter it's different probably. It's probably
Well the winter's brutal, but it's bad, but it's not that much worse than New York. I mean it's definitely worse, but it's whatever. Here's the thing. So Toronto is an international city, right? Toronto is kind of the New York of Canada, if there was one. It's where a lot of, you know, there's a lot of immigrants there. It's diverse. It's kind of crazy. There's a lot going on. I haven't spent appreciable time there, but that's kind of the vibe I'm getting. There's definitely some art presence. Montreal is sort of like a bigger Boston. It's when you're in Montreal, like you're in Canada. Toronto's an international city. Montreal is Canada, but it's still got a lot going on. There's a lot of culture there. The Canadians are an institution. It's just a naturally beautiful city. There's some hills, rivers converging, parks. It's fantastic. I love it. I'm a big fan.
I would love to go to Montreal. If I had the honor to, that would be, I think, one of the cities I'd love to go to.
The Bell Center, if you're a hockey fan, the Bell Center is a must-do. It is a must-do.
Did you go to a playoff game? Like, what was...
No, I've been to multiple Rangers-Canadians games, and I felt bad rooting for the Rangers. I'm like... I love this. I was absolutely entranced by the Canadians and the Canadians fans. Now, let me tell you one quick anecdote about my experience at the Bell Center, okay? It actually is topical because it resembled the Masters tournament over the past weekend. And you're probably thinking, what in God's name could the Bell Center resemble to Augusta National? So there's no strict rule at the Bell Center that you can't use your cell phone. But I'll tell you what, when the puck is on the ice, when the game is in action, there is nobody on their phone at the Bell Center. That even the people that you would look at, and they're like, oh, you know, this person's not, they don't look like a big hockey fan, right?
They are.
Yes, you're wrong. Every single fan in that arena, phone is nowhere to be seen. They're locked in on the puck, completely focused. Everyone is an expert. They're all analyzing the game. And you would think there's 15,000 general managers in the stands. I mean, you're just listening to people having in-depth conversations, some of them in French, which I don't speak any French. Some of them in French, very fast, very passionate, and very informed about the team in Montreal. It's a very hockey smart crowd and a really fun environment to take a game in. They're very passionate.
I think some of my favorite memories of growing up for the NHL playoffs was those Rangers, Canadians, Lightning Canadian series, the Senators Canadian, like those series that they played in, didn't matter if the Canadians won or not. And I'm not saying I'm a Canadians fan, it's just like those are like peak playoff memory. I mean, for a fact, I mean,
you know,
14, 17, you know, those are just great memories.
Even I think 2012 tried the best one.
But
anyway, no, there's no question. The Canadians bring a level of intensity and a quality that's unmatched, basically. Unmatched. It really is. Now, when it was the prime days of Carey Price, that was some good stuff. Patrick.
It's so sad he never won a cup. Or like, I mean, if you think about it, it's funny. Like, there's all these memes that the Lightning are playing the Canadians and they haven't played against each other in the playoffs since 2021. Wouldn't you think it'd be funny? It's like, oh, the Canadians are technically the Western Conference champion of 2021. That's how weird of a year it was. And the Lightning are the Eastern. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But they would have had to meet in the Eastern Conference Finals. So that's I guess the last time they've met in the playoffs. So is there any playoff matchups like that have been set that you're excited for?
I think you just hit on it. I don't think you're going to beat Tampa and Montreal. Now, those two teams are still deciding who's going to be home. Mm-hmm. You're not beating. I'm watching that. I am locked in on Tampa Bay, Montreal. That's, if you're not watching that playoff series, what are you watching? I mean, what are you watching?
I'm going to be biased here. The Battle of Pennsylvania between the Philadelphia Flyers and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
It's kind of a mid-off, though, let's be honest.
But that rivalry, though, it's different. It could be the, like, mid-off, as you say. But it's
neither one of them have gotten to 100 points this year, just for the record.
Who cares? It's the Battle of Pennsylvania. Okay. It is the most hated. Those teams hate each other. I mean,
that's great. I love that. Hatred is fun. I'm good with hatred.
Yeah. I mean, there's an interview where Crosby's like, I don't like anyone on their team.
Yeah.
And Crosby's a very like low, like tempered guy. He's like, I hate everyone on the team. That's the beauty of
that.
It.
Well, you're right. You're right. I'm somewhat messing with you. I'll tell you what. If you're not compelled by Boston, it looks like it'll be Boston. This isn't set yet, but it looks like it'll be Boston and Buffalo. So what do you have here? You've got one established team. They've started to mix out some of the veterans and they've gotten younger, but it's still the Boston Bruins, right? The reputation precedes them, and they're playing against the Buffalo Sabres. Now, Sabres have had a much better season, but if you're looking at the past, right, one of these franchises has had a lot of success. And is, I don't want to say the gold standard, but if they're not the gold standard, they're at least the silver standard. I mean, they're very solid. Buffalo, you know, they're kind of like a risky crypto coin that probably doesn't deserve your money. But right now the stock price is up a lot. So, you know, buy or sell it at your own will. But they're going against a blue chip, so to speak, in the Bruins. And that's going to be compelling to me.
I'm just saying, though, everyone's going to be tuning into game one. At the Buffalo, for the Buffalo's first home game back.
Yeah, I like how they've been so irrelevant that you have no idea what their arena is, and I don't either.
Oh, I mean, trust me. I mean, what being friends with this kid since freshman year, I've like become like a
well, where do they play?
They play at
it's
the.
Fine. I don't know either. That's the point.
No, it's like some HBSC arena or whatever.
Is that
I
right?
Swear. It used to be the RBC Center, I think. But that might
You're
be
wrong.
Carolina.
Well, I don't know what it used to be, but it's the Key Bank Center.
It's some bank.
Well, don't act like you know it once I say it, Patrick. Look, well, it's fine. Stand by it. Here's the point.
Bank.
They've stunk, and we don't know what their arena is called, and that's the way it should be. They've got to earn that. So I think it's fine.
I remember
stand
their
by the fact that you didn't have a clue.
Okay, fine. Whatever. But like, what's the Hartford Wolfpack's arena's name?
I don't know. I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. But I know the Canadians play at the Bell Center. I know the New York Rangers play at the Madison Square Garden. Right now. Who else has been good? The Tampa Bay Lightning, and they play at what is it? Amalie.
I think it's Amalie.
They say Amalie or Amalie.
It's Amalie. I thought it was Amalie.
Amalie.
Michael Goodrich is probably like this. The title of this episode will be "Let's Guess the Arena."
Yeah. Well, the point is this: if you've been good. The Dallas Stars have been great. American Airlines Arena. I know where you play. If you stink, I have no idea. All right, we're going to step aside. Maybe we'll do some research on arena sponsorship names and more. When we return, I actually have an idea. I don't want to say a new business, but possibly I'm going to outline my future on this very show when we're back right here on Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450. Welcome back to Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450. David Meridian joined by Patrick Moore. Okay, before the break, I teased an idea I have. Patrick, here's how this is going to run, okay? My name is David Meridian. I've done a little bit of sports broadcasting. You can decide at what level or to what skill quality, okay? I'm going to walk in. You are a Netflix producer, okay, or executive. And I am presenting to you a show idea I have. And you can either take it or leave it. You understand what I'm saying here?
Fair enough.
All right, so congratulations on your new position. Here we go. So here's what I'm going to say. I think one of the better shows made that's not an actual TV show is Parts Unknown with Anthony Bourdain. Have you ever seen that? Are you familiar, Patrick?
Isn't that the chef, right?
He's a chef. He goes around the world trying food. Now, that is an oversimplification of what the show actually is, because what he really is doing is he's using food as a device. He's using it as a tool to get people to trust him, to get people to open up to him. It's an introduction. The food is not the entire show. Mm-hmm. The show is, this is how people live here. This is how their politics is here. This is their history. This is how their daily life is, right? These animals roam around here. That's why they eat these foods. It's also a great deal about history. There's foods that are really cheap that are served in countries that have experienced a lot of poverty, things that have been sacred or whatever. So you can learn a great deal through a society by its food. That's the point, right? He's trying food. He's eating a lot of food, but they're talking about things and oftentimes that are much deeper than that. Okay. So yeah. With that said, with that as an introduction, I would like to have the same show. I want you to swap out food and replace it with sports. Okay. So that's maybe fair. I'm in some village in Australia and I'm talking about rugby. And the next thing you know, we're talking about the Australian Parliament or whatever, and why, you know, certain things have gone a certain way. Or maybe you're in India and I'm observing cricket or this ancient fighting practice in Italy. But the point is, you're using sports now, and it wouldn't really be professional sports. It could be professional sports, but I'm really more interested in maybe it would be youth sports or it could be recreation. It doesn't matter. You're trying to use sports as a tool to learn about the place. But I would be traveling the world, watching some well-known sports, some obscure sports. That's the show.
Well, it's kind of, it's the Anthony Bourdain, it's like Rick Steves. Heard of Rick Steves? He's like a travel, he's like, he writes a lot of books. He's like a travel writer. And I think he had a show on like PBS, like Rick Steves Travels Europe. It's something similar. I don't think he's not a chef, obviously, but I think he does the similar things like Anthony Bourdain. So I think it's a good concept, you know? I think it's great.
Are you buying it? Are you all right? You have three options. You can follow up. You can ask follow up questions and press. You can say I'm out, or you can say I'm in. Because remember, you're a Netflix executive.
My thing is what would be, in a way of like, where would you want to go first? And like, what is the production value? Like, how much are we?
I want to spend 2/3 of the time, I think, outside of the U.S. But and I'm not. I don't want to be going to Lambeau Field, right? I want it to be things you haven't heard of. Maybe I'm going to a Pop Warner game in Texas. Like I'd be fine with that. Or I'm going to a basketball court in Harlem or somewhere in Indiana. But I'm not going to Madison Square Garden. So if we're in the U.S., it's that kind of scene, right? I want to cover sports people haven't even heard of. I mean, but also you know ones that we have. I think you'd have to be in England for soccer. You'd probably have to go to the south of France for soccer. Hockey, you'd have to be in Canada. You'd probably also want to go to Sweden or really anywhere in Eastern Europe. I don't know if I'd be allowed to go to Russia. I would if they would have me.
I think for the hockey purposes, if you should decide to go to like Sweden or Finland or even Switzerland for hockey, because you want to know why? Because they have – actually – I have an idea for you. There's a tournament like the day before Christmas, day after Christmas. It's called the Spengler Cup. Every year it's played like HC Davos, who was like their big club in Switzerland. They're always in it. Canada will bring a team. The U.S. brought like a collegiate team this year, and they made it all the way to the final. And the U.S. team's never been to the final. Like, they always like show up and suck. So like it was a big year for it. I think if you want to cover a hockey tournament, like an unknown, that's your tournament. That's a tournament like I want to go to. Like I would spend my Christmas that whole week in Switzerland watching that tournament because it's a really cool tournament. And it's streamed.
The other thing that I'd have to do that I think would – now this is making it more expensive, no question. But I think this could make – if done right, I think we'd make the money back and more.
I think so too. I think any informational show like that is perfect.
I'm thinking Netflix, couple episodes, mini series, and then if they like it, we'll bring it back.
What about like HBO? You know,
HBO could work too. The problem is that you can swear and stuff on Netflix. HBO, a lot more people have Netflix, I think, than HBO.
Yeah, that's true. You got me there.
Here's the thing. Here's ideally what I'd like to do. I want to go with somebody who has had an established career in that. If it's a big sport, say I'm going to Sweden. I'd like to go with Henrik Lundqvist, you know? Lundqvist, tell me everything I need to know, right? Because I can't become – I can read as much as I want.
Eric Carlson too. I think there's a couple.
Give me somebody like that. And I'm not going to talk, oh, what was your favorite Ranger moment? What was it? No. I'm going to say, what was it like when you were a 7-year-old in Sweden? What did your average day look like? What was your high school like? And that's what we're going to get into. And there's going to be a lot of hockey, but there's also going to be a lot of life. But I would want to be but he's got to be my translator, right? I'm not going to speak the language and all that stuff.
Or you can learn.
It has to be in English for the crowd.
Well, what is it? It's like David Letterman does those like car drive. I think I like those types of shows.
Yeah. I'll just piggyback on what you just said. So Jerry Seinfeld, have you ever watched the Rich Eisen show, sports show?
Yeah.
So last year, Jerry Seinfeld was on the Rich Eisen show.
Mm-hmm.
And he was criticizing the set. He said the problem with all talk shows is it has to be about the conversation, but they're done in these very peculiar settings. You have this weird set, and everything's kind of made up. It doesn't feel comfortable. It's not a relaxing environment to talk, which I think undermines a talk show. Mm-hmm. So Seinfeld had comedians in cars getting coffee. They're driving in a car. They're in a coffee shop. Letterman, same kind of thing. They're trying to make the setting more natural, so you can have a more organic conversation. And this is effectively me having a talk show, but not in a studio. You know what I mean?
Do you think like Pat McAfee? Because I feel like sometimes when Pat McAfee goes to certain, like when they go to the combine, the draft.
They're still at a set.
Yeah, no, I understand it. But I get your point on the terms of like the, you know, being authentic instead of just yes. kind of being, oh, they're in a studio somewhere. Or like, I mean. I don't know. I get your point though. I think it's a good concept. Have you told anyone this idea? This is the important part. Am I the
not
first
really.
Person?
Nobody important.
Okay.
Well, that's not right. Nobody who has influence let me walk that back before I get broken up with. Nobody with influence in media. Do you know what I'm saying? You get what I'm saying?
That's completely fair. I've
told important people, but not in the media world.
I'm honored to be one of those people in the media world to know. Or maybe, I guess, yeah.
So you think it's an interesting idea? You never told me if you were an executive. Are you going to give me some leeway there?
I'm not going to say no. I think it's an just, you know,
I hear
have,
yes.
I don't, why do I have to say yes? I'm like, all right, I got it.
Because we're having a meeting.
Okay, fine. I mean, I'm interested. I'm all interested.
Right, so you're going to call me back.
Yeah, I'm gonna call you back. Just give me your episode plans. Give me like.
All right, let's brainstorm some episode plans. Episode one, Sweden.
Okay, what's episode two?
Episode two, Australia, rugby.
You could also do New Zealand because the new
or New Zealand.
Yeah.
Or both. No, yeah. Let's stick to one.
Yeah. You know what you could do for Nitro Circus, like all those like stunt diving stuff, that's pretty big in Australia, I think. Like BMXing and all that type of stuff, it's pretty.
Oh god. Pretty big.
That's my knowledge. That's my like knowledge, less like minimal knowledge of Australia.
Maybe if I went to Indiana, I could do NASCAR or something like that, or just IndyCar. I don't know.
Northern Ireland, Rory McIlroy.
Yeah. There could be some golf. I think conventionally everyone would say you've got to go to St. Andrews, and maybe I would, but I'd like to go somewhere else like that too. I think that could be.
Those courses, I just love to like go there, but like I'm terrified to play. You know,
I've played St. Andrews.
Okay. Well, I mean,
it was fantastic. It's not that hard. I mean, it's
fantastic if you're good.
There's difficulty there, but you can play it.
Well, I think I'd do okay. I wouldn't shoot like a 70.
I shot an 81. And this is years ago. I was young.
Mm-hmm.
81 in the hole. I mean, that was a legitimate. I shot 81. There wasn't. It's not like, oh, I'll take this. Give me. I shot an 81.
And that's good. That's great. I'm not. I think it's a very interesting idea, and I think you should maybe, you know, talk to people you know. I think it's interesting.
Do you have an episode recommendation?
I think, like, you should do one, like, the longest episode is on the Scandinavian countries, because I think those are very interesting with their sports.
Here's the thing. You mentioned this with New Zealand and Australia. I want to focus on one culture in one country, or even in one small area.
Okay.
If you go to New Zealand and Australia, there's going to be a difference, right? I want to use sports to get through to something else.
But it's hard to do that. And You're a new show. You should take risk a little bit. That's why, you know, that's the
business. Well, it's not necessarily risk. It's just, it's not really the point.
No, I get it. But I think sometimes it's good to entice your viewers, to keep your viewers on their toes.
So you think one city would be boring after all that time?
I mean, it depends on how long you're going to, like, do it.
35 minutes.
Huh?
35, 40 minutes.
Oh, okay. Then that's not that bad. I think it's always good to keep the show, like, you know, change it up once in a while. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that's my idea. I'm a little bit disappointed that Patrick isn't green lighting it.
Hold on a minute.
He's yellow lighting it, which is fine. Look, it's okay. I respect your honesty.
Just, I want, you know.
You're going to give me a call back. I get it.
Yes.
You got to talk it over with your colleagues.
And they're going to be like, great.
Now, I would have appreciated another city recommendation, but that's okay.
Can only think of so many.
Can you think of an obscure sport? I think cricket and also the Caribbean could be interesting, if not India or somewhere like that.
Maybe do like a beach country, like a beach city.
What do they play?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. I think there should be an episode of like a famous Olympian, like Greece. I feel like you could do a whole episode. I mean, that's where the Olympics was born.
Yeah.
You know, that would
Greece,
be.
Greece would be. I've always wanted to go to Greece.
That's where. Okay,
You got one.
Yeah. So right. What? We want to jump into the match? Let's jump in full. I want to say this to all the listeners here, that if you ask David who were the Masters champ, I mean, I think do you know all the major winners?
I can go back to Tiger's win in 97.
For the Masters or for?
For the Masters. No. The one I would struggle with the most is the PGA Championship.
Yeah.
I can get a lot of opens and you got to tell me, but the thing is for those other three, you have to tell me the year and the golf course.
What's your ranking of the majors?
Great question. The Masters is first. The PGA is fourth. The whether or not the Open or the US Open is second and third is completely dependent on the course, right? So last year, the Open was played at a course. I don't think last year. Was last year Royal Troon?
What, for the Open or the US Open?
Yeah, the Open.
Oh, I think it wasn't it Port Rush?
Yes, it was Port Rush. Right? You're right.
Yeah, I think it was
the year before it was Troon. So yeah. Port Rush is good, right? Port Rush is solid. And Oakmont was fantastic. So that's like a top. I mean, I don't know how you pick a win. I mean, really close.
I think they're always just right there. It depends on.
Yeah, you can have a great conference. Now, here's the thing. The Open, I like the – probably the Open is the answer over the U.S. Open. Very slim. The U.S. Open is the hardest. So if you like suffering, if you like the players to not light it up, which I do, that's great. And the courses are fantastic. But the Open, there's just something to it. It's the way the game was always played. It's the links style. It's the weather, you know. So it's probably the Open second, but it's very close.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember, was it Charles Schwartzel that was the last Masters winner to be over par? Is that true fact?
He wasn't over par.
Or no, there was someone that won like in 20-something. 2000.
And they were over par at Augusta?
Yeah. Because remember how like there was a, if you go back in the history books, like in the early 2010s, they were really low scores. And now they're like, oh, 12 under par. Well, yeah, that's true. It's understandable. I kind of wonder.
I don't know the last time there was an over par winner.
I mean, look at the equipment. That's the new fancy high tech equipment. JJ Spahn won what?
Well, that's completely different.
Yeah, no, I know. I think
scores at Oakmont have always been that difficult, and they've lengthened it and changed it to modernize it. So it's not really a apples to apples comparison, unfortunately.
I think
Patrick, here's the thing. We could talk about this for hours. There's a big problem in golf with the equipment. A big problem. Because what you have is the equipment is destroying the professional game. It's completely destroying the professional game. It's too good. And so what do you do to prevent that, right? If money didn't matter, which we know everything always comes back to money, If money didn't matter at all, what you would do is you'd say, hey, we made a mistake. We're making the game too easy for the pros. We're running out of land. It's bad for the environment. These courses are getting, you know, pushed out. Let's go back to the way it was in 1995 when the golf ball stunk and the clubs were horrible. That's the way it should be, right? And everybody, now your average amateur, if they go from really good equipment to bad equipment, they're not going to see a huge difference. They stink either way, right?
Yeah.
You can even lump me into that. I'm a 4 handicap. Maybe I'd be a 6. I don't really care, okay? Get a lesson. You'll learn how to figure it out. Yeah. Wouldn't make a big difference for the amateur. It would save the professional game, right? That's what you should do. What happens when you do that? TaylorMade's out of business. Titleist's out of business. Callaway's out of business. Because what are they selling? They're selling nothing. All these clubs are the same, right? They can't make any innovations.
Oh,
them innovating and using science and technology has ruined the sport. So really at a standstill. What I think would be a shame, Patrick, and I was talking actually with, I'm not going to say who, but a legitimately prominent member of the golf media world a couple of years ago about this. And our paths crossed and we had a discussion. I loved what he said. The beautiful thing about golf is the pros and the worst amateurs play the same game. They play the same clubs. They play the same courses. And if a bad amateur hits the ball, hits a 9-iron 110 yards, right? And a pro hits it 170 with a 9-iron, 160 with a 9-iron, they can be like, oh, you know, I see the difference. There's very clearly the difference. There's no conversions needed to be made. This guy hits his 9-iron 60 yards longer than I do, right? Once you start to change, once you've got the pros playing wooden bats and you've got the amateurs playing metal bats, that's lost. And I think that would be a real shame.
Yeah, I think it's just times have changed. I don't know. I mean, you said it pretty much how my uncle says it all the time about how the game is changing and everyone's buying all this stuff and the pros are hitting some stuff as the amateurs. I don't know. I mean, I think it's who knows. I mean, if these amateurs can hit the same length than the pros, then I mean, it's like, well, what, you want them to go back 10 yards, 15 yards?
Here's the issue, right? So the golf ball and the club, really the ball, is so much better than it was in the 90s. They figured it out, right? There was a revolution. And you had Rory McIlroy, and he's still going to hit it longer than everybody with bad clubs, and that's the way it should be. But he hit a drive on the I think it was the fifth hole that went 365 yards. Mm-hmm. There's no golf course in America.
Is that without carry?
That was all in. But he flew it over. There's a bunker that's 310 yards out. He flew it over that bunker on the fifth hole.
Saturday?
I think it was on Sunday.
Is that the one I was talking – there was one where he destroyed one. And it hit into the pine. It went over the bunker. And then his next shot, he almost killed some
– That was patient. Number two, yeah. That was number two. So here's what we'll do. Go ahead and make a quick point, and then we'll take a quick break.
I
just want
to say that I think the Masters, it was Rory's one to lose.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Well, I have more to say. We're going to do a really concise Masters recap, and then we'll look ahead the week upcoming for the Tucson Roadrunners. It's all right here on Fox Sports 1450 for Happy Hour. Welcome back to Happy Hour on Fox Sports 1450. Now, before the break, Patrick, you said it was McIlroy's tournament to lose at the Masters. You're partially right, but listen, Justin Rose had a 2-shot lead going into that second nine, Patrick, and he hit a horrible iron from the middle of the fairway on 11, chunked a chip on 12. 3-putted a par on 13. So it was also Justin Rose's tournament to lose. Let's not forget about that. You make a good
point. Cameron Young's tournament to lose too.
Cameron Young had a chance. He was leading on the first side. Absolutely. All right. You wanted to ask me a question.
Yes.
And we haven't gotten to it yet.
So I don't know if people who listen to our show watched the Masters this past weekend, but the strict rules of Augusta, you know, it's a very like, it's an honor. You know, you don't want to act out, you know, you don't see a lot of guys doing crazy things like maybe at a PGA tour. You don't see Joel Damon at the Masters and him lifting a shirt like a waste management. But Sergio, I think this was on 2, and Sergio hit a really bad drive. And there's videos of Sergio, like he got banned from a golf course in Spain a couple years ago because he hit a really bad, you know, sand trap shot, and he started, you know, hitting the sand like repeatedly. Yep. And that's kind of like a cardinal sin in golf if you do that, you know. And he like hit a really bad drive, which I thought it like sounded good. I mean, talking to me,
apparently not.
But apparently not. and he like just destroys the ground. Like just takes a huge chunk out of the ground of the tee box.
And then he
walks to like a cooler or something like that, breaks his driver, and then he's carrying John Rahm's clubs.
Which I thought was really funny.
Which if he was asked like, oh, you know, what do you think about this? And he's like, oh, like, his caddy had to do something. I was fine with doing it. I thought it was a bet.
I didn't know that was legal.
I mean, they're like their first early pairing of the Masters. I think no one really cares.
But the rules are the same for everybody. If that was illegal, he would have gotten disqualified. I thought you can have one caddy the entire tournament. There's a rule that you can't have multiple people caddying for you at the same time. So if carrying your clubs counts as caddying, maybe it's you can only have one person give you advice. But there is a rule in there somewhere.
Apparently,
he didn't break any rule because they would have disqualified him.
I don't think John Rahm would have taken his advice anyways because he was
actually playing so poorly.
John Rahm played really good on Sunday. I mean, I know it meant nothing, but. And then there was a guy from Augusta National went up to Sergio and probably gave him a warning.
Gave him a warning.
And so there's kind of speculation online. It's like, even though he got those warnings, do you think Sergio should come back next year?
Yes.
I think so. I mean, look, he gets upset. And if he apologizes.
Here's the way I see it quickly, because we are running out of time a little bit. He was warned. Okay. After he was warned, was there another issue? There wasn't, right?
He was just dying.
What's the point of if you're gonna ban him? But he was warned. I mean, I think a warning is reasonable. It's a very frustrating game. He was warned. Okay, let's move on. Patrick, I'd love to break it down, but we are up against it.
That's
my take.
That's my take
right there.
All right, so
the Tucson Roadrunners, here's what's coming up this week. A Wednesday matchup against the San Diego Gulls at Pechanga Arena. Coverage is going to start at 6:45 on Fox Sports 1450, the final road game of the season for Tucson. And then on April 17th, it's the beginning of the final home weekend. The Henderson Silver Knights come to town for the 10th anniversary player card giveaway. It's also a Cool Willy's Frosty Friday and a Salute to Service Night. Very busy on Friday. And then Saturday, April 18th, the final home game of the year. There's a cold beers and cheeseburgers ticket pack. You've also got t-shirt giveaways, fan appreciation night. So there's a lot going on this weekend. The final home weekend for the Tucson Roadrunners. Tucson home against Henderson. Both games start at 6:45.
Didn't we just start? Doesn't it feel like we just did the first episode? Like that's how I wanted to say.
It just feels like it's been
a great ride. You know,
it has. So. And it's going to end next week. Our final show of Happy Hour will be next Tuesday. So don't get all emotional on me yet, Patrick. We'll save that next Tuesday. Thank you so much for listening. For our producer, Michael Goodrich, Patrick Moore, this is David Meridian saying so long. We appreciate you listening. We hope to see you next Tuesday.